Hello, welcome. This is Fergus Nicol with the BBC's World Business Report. In a moment, our main headline, Rebuilding Lebanon, a year after the explosion that devastated the centre of the capital. Except they're not rebuilding. We'll ask why not and what are the dangers ahead. Also in the programme today, if you have to work from home, why not make your home Dubai?
Dubai is uniquely placed in the globe to allow me to work with places as far as Australia and the United States and still doing it within acceptable working hours.
And later in the programme, why champions of women in science and engineering are celebrating a new Barbie doll. Those headlines coming up at the next half hour. Welcome to World Business Report. So, a year after the port of Beirut was obliterated by an enormous chemical explosion, the city and the wider nation are struggling to recover to anything like a positive economic outlook. In fact, the World Bank warned last month that the financial crisis in Lebanon could be the worst in the world for more than 150 years. Marking the anniversary today, President Emmanuel Macron of France said a failing political leadership in Beirut owed their people the truth.
Chers amis, il y a un an jour pour jour.
Dear friends, 1 year ago today, a terrible explosion devastated the port of Beirut. And I believe that we all still remember the disfigured city and above all the traumatized lives, and we forget nothing. We do not forget the families or those who lost their loved ones, but also those whose lives were profoundly disrupted, shaken up during this terrible explosion.
We'll hear from a former government minister in a moment, but first a glimpse of the day-to-day difficulties in the country. Aline Kamakian owns the Meirig restaurant in Beirut.
Every day, the Lebanese pound is losing values against the dollar. So whoever had in the bank money, it's worth nothing. So everything is cash. Everybody is, you want to buy meat, it's cash. You want to buy a car, it's cash. Everything is cash. We're literally concerned about the security situation. I think there would be a lot of kidnapping because people need money. If your son is hungry, if mother needs medication, you would do anything for it.
Well, let's try to dig a little deeper into the way national finances have been managed or mismanaged. Here's one version of events from Dan Azzi, who used to head the Lebanese branch of Standard Chartered Bank.
The Lebanese lira-earning citizen was basically living way above their means because the currency was too strong. So we were able to take vacations, change cars every couple of years, buy new iPhones, etc. The financer of this whole thing was the Lebanese saver, the expat. The central bank did some financial engineering transactions, which basically paid excessive, I mean, obscene interest rates. I'm talking up to 31% on US dollars. In a classic Ponzi scheme type of methodology for collecting the money. So they went overseas, called the Lebanese expats, said to them, hey, I'll pay you these crazy interest rates.
So in claiming there's been a classic Ponzi scheme kind of thing, he's suggesting basically a fraud perpetrated by constantly borrowing from new lenders, in this case in the diaspora, to pay existing lenders what looks like a good return on their investment. He's not the only one who sees it that way. This is Dr. Nasser Saidi, a former Minister of Economy and Industry who now runs his own consultancy in Beirut.
Today, unfortunately, we're commemorating what I call Beirushima Day. It is a legacy of utter destruction, shame. And what has happened over the past year is, of course, that the cost of the multiple crises Lebanon is going through has been increasing. You've had lack of any policy action, no reforms. Nothing has been done to rebuild the port or surrounding areas by government. And the damage has all been transferred over to the private sector. You have to rebuild infrastructure. The cost of that is going to amount to at least $15 billion. And then, of course, you've got to compensate for the damage that was done to people and their businesses. And again, nothing has been done.
Why? Is the government incompetent or unwilling?
Initially, I thought it was incompetence. Increasingly, I believe this is deliberate policy of immiseration, of making people poorer in order to undertake an economic adjustment and financial adjustment from what is, in fact, the biggest Ponzi scheme in history. It was deliberate policy by government and the central bank to impose an inflation tax to reduce the value of public debt, instead of having an orderly adjustment with an agreement that we had been discussing with the IMF that would have brought financial aid and liquidity to the system. We've had a massive haircut on deposits of around 80%.
It sounds like literally the coffers are nearly empty.
It is, and the central bank has run out in effect of reserves because they used much of the reserves to protect an overvalued pound, which is now depreciated by some 90%. Inflation's now running in excess of 130% per annum and accelerating. The lack of liquidity has also meant the four major pillars of the Lebanese economy, trade and tourism, the health industry, the education industry, banking and finance, have been shattered. It is difficult to see how the economy is going to pick up again and how are you going to get jobs in the private sector absent liquidity and aid from the international community.
But you made it sound at the beginning, Dr. Saidi, kind of like a conspiracy to achieve some really radical restructuring. Who'd be in a position to do that and why?
The main reason is that the banks and the central bank didn't want to accept the losses on their balance sheet due to the reduction in the value of public debt. There were massive losses as a result of it. They're unwilling to accept those losses. And therefore, they actively sabotaged a deal that was being negotiated with the IMF. It is personal interests of bankers and the central bank to avoid recognition of massive losses. You've also got a kleptocratic political class that wants to hold on to power, and they do not want reforms. What you need to rescue Lebanon is fiscal reform, financial reform, and the politicians do not want that because they view that as a loss of their power.
So the existing structure that was built very carefully after the civil wars, ending in the Taif Accords, and essentially what they're so self-enriching, you don't want to mess with the winning formula.
That's correct, even if it means a tremendous loss to the population. The World Bank and others have pointed out to the fact that we're now living in Lebanon the greatest financial crisis in history. I estimate that the loss of real per capita income is in excess of 40%. Poverty now is in excess of 60% of the population. The main vulnerability now is Lebanon becoming a failed state. In effect, over the past year, over the past 18 months, what was a middle income country has been reduced into a poor third world country. The minimum wage right now, monthly minimum wage, is now $33. That's less than in Bangladesh. A university professor now earns $185 per month. A judge, $225 per month. So the big danger, I think, is Europe will now have potentially another failed state on the Mediterranean. You already have Libya, you have Syria. Lebanon could be next. And what that means is massive migration. Human capital is what Lebanon is about. It is a country of services and therefore needs its human capital. We're losing our engineers, our doctors, our nurses by droves. They're going into the GCC countries, they're going international, they're going to Europe. And once you lose your human capital, it's very difficult to rebuild. You can always rebuild infrastructure. We know how to do that. Bricks and mortar and telecoms. But if you lose your human capital, countries typically do not recover. This is the big danger Lebanon is facing today.
Thanks to Dr. Nasser Saidi on the line from Beirut.